Welcome to the Future of Podcasts, where I deep dive into discussions with remarkable founders and industry experts, and together we explore the challenges of today and how they are innovating through them to shape a brighter tomorrow. Today I'm in conversation with Alwin Hunt, co-founder of The Rookies, a platform dedicated to cultivating the next generation of creative professionals by developing their skills, showcasing their talent and connecting them into industry to further their careers in the digital arts. Alwin himself was a professional chef turned look development and texture artist and has brought to life characters such as Bandersnatch from Tim Burton's Alice in Wonderland, Smaug the Dragon from The Hobbit, General Zod from The Man of Steel, along with Tomb Raider, Peter Rabbit, Thor Ragnarok, Alien Covenant, Logan, Game of Thrones, X-Men, Iron Man 3, the list goes on. In this episode, we discuss how the current education system is leaving creative students in debt and unprepared, shifting the tides from uncertainty to opportunity in the age of generative AI, the power of narrative and immersive content, the principles of building a global community from the ground up, among other things. I was surprised to find how influential Alwin and The Rookies platform has been within Hollywood and AAA gaming, and despite that was delighted to speak to such a humble, down-to-earth person and all-round awesome guy. And with that, I'm excited to present to you Alwin Hunt, co-founder of The Rookies. Alwin, welcome.
Ian, thank you.
I'm excited for the conversation. And I suppose to kick us off, why don't you give us a brief introduction of yourself and The Rookies platform?
Yeah, so my name's Alwin Hunt. I'm one of the original co-founders of The Rookies, along with Andrew McDonald. We're both based in Adelaide. And The Rookies platform is a community of industry professionals, industry companies that just kind of make up this platform. We join the dots, essentially. It's been around for 14 years. It's very well industry supported. And our goal is to really help those non-professionals navigate the journey to get into creative industries.
Yeah, awesome. So on that note, surely there's like university courses for this sort of stuff. So why's The Rookies difference? What problems are you solving? What was the purpose for actually building the platform?
Yeah, so the original purpose was really, in my background's in visual effects, where I spent 20 plus years. So we used to review a lot of students' portfolios work, and there was a gap between students coming out of training facilities and entering into industry. They were missing certain skills, and you know, we decided back then to kind of bridge that gap and create The Rookies platform. And the gap that we feel is really to help those people navigate and make good decisions about choosing the correct university or training facility.
Right.
There are, like you mentioned, there are a lot out there. There are a lot that are doing a really bad job, and there are a lot that have fantastic marketing budgets and seem like they're doing great jobs, but it's not until it's too late and you've paid your fees and stuff that you might find out that it's not going to set you up for the industry.
Right. So not just navigating students into industry, is helping them navigate the education system as well.
Exactly.
Right,
so
right, right.
Yeah, it's a long journey when you look at The Rookies platform, and you know, we'll get into this, but really our whole motivation was really to identify and reward schools that were doing a great job and making students employable by the end of their courses or university degrees or whatever it may be. The Rookies is a platform for portfolios, but we also have the Rookie Awards, and then we also have our global school rankings. And it's all interwoven. And the way that we do our global school rankings is really to reward the schools that are doing or outputting students that are industry ready.
Yeah, awesome. And you mentioned your experience as well, and me doing my research. So you're a professional chef turned and visual effects expert, really. And I mean, in the intro, I've given, you know, just some of the movies and stuff you touched on. So it seems like you've got a really unique view on where the gaps were in market, as you mentioned, and again, how to really kind of cultivate the skill set. So that's fantastic. So I do applaud you on this endeavor.
Yeah.
So you mentioned, you know, like I suppose, and I think many students have felt this throughout their life. Me and my friends joked about it when we went through the education system, let's say. You kind of spat out, you paid all your fees, and you're like, oh, well, what do I do now? Where do I go? So I'm keen to get in later on into some of the key stories or people you've placed. Well, actually, let's do that now. Success stories. So yeah, I know there's five stages to the program. So creators move from debut, player, contender, rookie, all the way to pro. Question is, what sort of opportunities open up for them each phase of the program, and where have you placed some of your pros previously?
Yeah, so just to elaborate a little bit more on those user types, so a debut, you know, that could be a high school student that loves playing games or loves watching films, and you know, they really have no idea where to go, and even if there are career pathways into these sort of industries.
Yeah.
So they come onto the platform. We have curated content that really just helps them learn about the industries, you know, the types of roles. You know, there's this kind of idea that to get into games and visual effects, you need a strong coding background, but actually when you break it down, there's, you know, roles that are completely artistic, and then there's hybrid roles where you've got a bit of artistic and a bit of technical, and then right to the other end where you do, you know, we are at that sort of more technical end. And we feel that even at that level, high schools are not doing a great job to really educate our kids about these future careers. We're fortunate because we work at Adobe and we get to see through the lens of Adobe all these new industries that are embracing 3D and their opportunities that present themselves. But schools are, you know, especially at high schools and even to a degree, universities are really bogged down in the paperwork, and they're not as nimble as what industry are. And you know, there's always been a lag behind education keeping up with technology changes, and whether it's software development or whether it's, you know, things like generative AI, which I'm sure we'll get into later on. But really, the goal is to educate these kids about these career pathways. So that was debut. And then when you look at the other user levels, they're really at different stages of their learning journey. So that could be somebody that's in, you know, their first or second year, and then you've got a contender who's graduated, who is really out there, got a portfolio of work, just honing their soft skills and interviewing techniques and just being able to understand what that next level of skills are needed to get into the industry. And in some ways, those skills, those life skills, soft skills, or whatever you want to call them, are almost more important than the actual portfolio. And then we have our rookies. So we have these people that come through the platform, and then it's this beautiful ecosystem where we get them coming through for 3 or 4 years, and then we get them going into industry, and then they feel they want to give back. So then they come back onto the platform either giving feedback to these debuts or come back as judges for contests. Yeah, so there's a number of different ways that people come back onto the platform.
Real ecosystem. And yeah, we'll get to that because that's one of my questions in terms of the community stuff. So very interesting to get into that and the judges. And the influence they have, etc. But you mentioned one thing right there which really caught my attention, because I experience this quite frequently nowadays. I'll be out socializing, networking, whatever, and you say, oh, hey, how do you do? What do you do for a living? And someone says something, and you're like, I didn't even know that was an industry, let alone a job. So to your earlier point around, well, what are the roles? Because I think I'm similar in that I'm fascinated with the gaming industry. I love my job at Adobe. I'd love to lean more into that gaming industry. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I don't have certain skills, so why would I bother? But to your point, if there's education out there to say, oh, hey, it's, you know, there's creative directors and they do this exactly, and there's technical development which do this exactly. So being able to articulate and show that there are actually positions for people, I think just that alone, that soft skill or that knowledge base, I believe could go a long way. So yeah, that's really great to hear you're doing that. But yeah, it's fascinating these sorts of these industries and what people do within them.
Yeah, know? Just to pick up on that, like we, as part of what the platform, we're developing this rookies learning, and it's really focused on the high school student. And we've developed these playbooks, and one of them is a gaming playbook, and we've actually partnered with Epic Games, which are the creators of Fortnite. And they did a series of interviews for us, and it's really interviewing people within the company and their journey and how they got into it. And what has been fascinating watching even those interviews is that those types of companies aren't generally looking in the areas that you would expect them to be. So they look for people with backgrounds in architectural visualization. They look for people from all, you know, they could be 3D jewelry designers. When you think about a game, it's made up of all these kind of skills that can transcend into games, right? And a lot of the times, these people coming from these other industries are really experts, and they're able to bring a level of realism to the game that, you know, that is expected nowadays. It's interesting to see that, you know, you don't have to go study a game design and development course to get into a company like Epic Games.
Yeah, that's awesome. And let's touch on that, because I think you're really underselling yourself. Like, when I look into the sort of work that you personally have touched, but also your students, we've got films, you know, Wonder Woman, Guardians of the Galaxy, The Mummy, Iron Man, Captain America, The Avengers. In AAA gaming, you've got Hell's Blade, A Senua's Sacrifice, and I want to call that out. That's an amazing game. Far Cry, Middle-Earth, Shadow of Mordor, etc. The list goes on. So, and to your point, someone in a totally different industry being able to pivot into this and offer a level of expertise to provide that realism, which makes the game, the movie, more immersive and, you know, believable. Because what's always fascinated me about us as humans is how driven by narrative we are. But then the aesthetics also really play a big role. I mean, some really creative movies have a lack of dialogue, let's say, but still drive such a motive force just through the visuals and the movement of the actors or the characters, mm-hmm. let's say. So it's fast. I mean, as a consumer of this, and a fan of this, I tip my hat to everyone in the industry. It must be painstakingly, must take painstaking amount of time and the skill level to get in there. So it's great to hear people pivoting into that.
I was just going to say, with that, you know, there are certain times, and I remember when, you know, playing Last of Us, and you're like, holy moly. And I was spending more time looking at the environments than playing the game, because I was just, wow, you know, that next level. And there's introduction of software, and, you know, we're lucky here, you know, with Adobe that, with the Substance 3D Collection, which was really, it forged its teeth in the gaming industry. And that software alone was the difference that, you know, really elevated games to that next level of realism. When you saw Substance introduced, that's what took it to that next level, and everyone just paid attention. And in visual effects, I think, you know, for me, coming from that background, when I don't notice visual effects and it's integrated seamlessly, that to me is beauty, and I think, you know, the movie that's probably come the closest to that is Dune. When I watch Dune, and you're immersed in the story, and I'm not sitting there scrutinizing the visual effects because of, you know, glitches and stuff that I can see. It is so seamless that it's just extraordinary. And I think, you know, when you come from that industry, that you appreciate that seamless integration a lot more.
Yeah, right. I think you've answered one of my questions was, being an expert in this field, does it ruin your experience of games and movies? But I think you just answered that, where, you know, because I know areas where I've, you know, got to a level of expertise, I found in some ways kind of ruins the experience, because you're kind of nitpicking. You're like, oh, they could have spent a bit more time on this and that. But as you say, when it reaches mastery, ironically, it becomes unnoticed.
Exactly.
And it moves from being noticed to actually being immersive.
Yep.
As you mentioned, yep. Yeah. No, that's a great point. So on that point, I don't know, top, a hard question maybe, but top three movies, top three games.
Oh, top three, that's a big call. Like I said, Dune for me, and I haven't seen the second one yet. I was planning to do that this week, actually, but Dune is up there. And just some of the originals, like, as a kid, like the original Star Wars movies, that changed my life. That just took me to a place that I'd never been to before. And I think, And, you know, like you mentioned at the start of the show, I'd already gone through a whole career of chefing at a very high level, which gave me a whole set of skills to then get into this industry and navigate it. But, you know, when I look at the chefing, it was always about the creative process, and it didn't matter whether it was in food or whether it was in digital art or whatever. It's always been about the creative for me. And just seeing that technical creative wizardry, just that blew my mind. And I knew when I saw that on TV that's what I wanted to get into, and that's what I was driven to do that. But yeah, top three games. I mean any game that pretty much comes out now is unbelievable visually. So I mean, you know, my kids are a lot into Fortnite. I've got mates at work on Fortnite, and I'm always sort of, they're keeping me up to speed with, you know, a lot of the games. But I try not to play a lot because they can consume your life as well. Yeah. So, and I'm pretty busy, obviously, with all the stuff going on. But yeah.
Yeah, right. I mean, and again, with kids as well, I think I found the same. If you want to immerse yourself in a game, you have to sacrifice something.
Yes.
It's your sleep or it's
your liver.
Yeah. But I mentioned before, and I really want to, I don't know if we can name check one of your students who went to work on Hellblade Senua's Sacrifice, because to me that was just such an amazing mix of, you know, the look, the texture, the motion capture, the sound. I watched a lot of the behind the scenes, just the sound alone, the research involved, all coming together to deliver this game. What I understand is the game designer's purpose, which is to get the audience to really experience and empathize with what it's like with those suffering from mental health conditions and going through the grieving process. So any of the listeners who've not played the game, highly recommend it. Also, the game, in terms of the mechanics, the puzzles, the adventures you go on, everything is so metaphorical. Mm-hmm. So even if you're trying to solve a puzzle to move ahead, there's a metaphor to that, and you stop and think about that. And so the game works on so many different levels. So I don't know if we can, but if we can name check the person who contributed to that.
So we've had several people that have gone through the rookies. Like, we had Ninja Theory, who were the
games developer. Yeah.
Yeah, sponsor of the rookies, rookie awards. So just to explain that a little bit. So we get sponsors that, you know, that are part of the Rookie Awards. So we have studio partners, and then we have, you know, your hardware, software partners, and they'll offer prizes. With our studio partners, what we're trying to do is really create career opportunities. So they will offer something. So whether that's a on-site internship that may last for 6 months, or it could be a, you know, 6 to 8 week internship, it could be a portfolio. It's really up to the individual studio what they would like to offer. So that's all part of the Rookie Award. So that's creating those opportunities. Yeah, right. So Ninja Theory have been an amazing partner for us for a number of years. So we've had some amazing success stories of people that have entered into the Rookie Awards, won that internship, that are still working there. So several people, I can't remember all their names off the top of their head, but we've had several people go through there that are still there. What I will say,
so through the Rookie Awards, they don't just get the creds, they get the opportunity.
They get the opportunity. Yeah, so we set up each year, we set up, so we, again, because of my history in visual effects for almost 20 plus years, and the same as Andrew's, we have a really strong connection with companies and people within those companies. And if there's one thing that people know about the rookies, is that it's very well industry supported, and globally that brand is recognized. And if you receive any accolades from the rookies platform, whether it's through the Rookie Awards or whether it's through the portfolio site, recruiters know that, and it's held to a very high esteem. So they recognize that. And just going back to Hellblade, that tech was being created when I was in visual effects, and they've taken tech that they'd taken tech from sort of visual effects, where they were using the camera domes to then create photogrammetry of digital doubles. They took that technology into games, but they were the first ones to do that. And to your point, because I had watched behind the scenes as well, their music and the audio was choreographed that it would lead players through the game.
Yeah,
and that was the first time it was actually being used to manipulate people as they were playing games as well. So they had, not only did they have this tech where they were creating these amazing digital doubles that were photorealistic, but they were also using other techniques to really elevate the game as well, which I think resonated with a lot of people.
Yeah, those multiple voices as well. Again, the mental side of it was just spooky, scary, like immersive. It was just, again,
you felt like you were there.
Yeah,
it was crazy.
It was, yeah, some of I'm getting chills just thinking about some of the moments in that game. But you touched on the partners, et cetera, and there's a question there as well. Something quite unique about, again, the Rookies is the multifaceted community. So you have students, alumni, as you mentioned, they come back to be judges. You have judges and the partners. What would you say are the key principles in building a global and loyal community? Because I think a lot of brands, organizations struggle with this. So, you know, any insights you can give here, I think would be quite interesting.
No, it's a great point. You know, you can't build it overnight. You know, like a lot of companies look at what we've created and they're like, well, you know, it's a very loyal follower. What I will say is that, you know, the Rookies, any member on the Rookies platform can reach out to me as a co-founder. We like to be connected with our members. We want people to come to our platform and go, oh, that's got a soul. It feels like there's genuine people behind that.
Yeah.
There's a lot of platforms and portfolio sites out there where you're just a portfolio, and you can put your work there and it can, you know, you might get some community feedback or whatever it is, but we feel like we're a tight community. We feel like, you know, our point of difference is that it is only for non-professionals. So for a lot of people that are first starting out, they're very intimidated to even post one little bit of work, let alone post it against professional work, right? So the Rookies platform is only for non-professionals. And the cool thing with that is even when you go on the site, you're like, oh, my goodness, this work is just incredible.
Yeah.
But you can still filter based on those user types that we talked about before, right? So if you want to benchmark yourself against other debuts from around the world or other players or contenders, then that's giving you a benchmark of what the level is with other students around the world, which is essentially they're going to be your competition when you're, you know, coming through the years and coming through your training. These same people are going to be the same ones that are going to be applying for the jobs as you. So I think there's always a danger.
Some friendly competition.
Yeah, there's always a danger when you're studying that you're competing against your classmates the school down the road or whatever it is. But, you know, after COVID, even entry-level graduate jobs are now, you know, global jobs. So companies are looking for the best talent. So you could be sitting here in Australia but still be applying for jobs at Epic Games or Riot Games or wherever it may be because they're hiring remotely now. So you have to there's good and the bad. So now you have to be able to know what that benchmark is and be able to elevate yourself to that level. So you're not just competing with classmates.
Yeah, and on that point, because I know, like, there's challenges in getting into something like the movie industry, let's say, because it's quite dependent on the location of shooting. But as you say, the tide seems to be changing. So is that a challenge in trying to place people into cultivate and keep talent within Australia, as an example? What's your experience there, and what are the challenges with, again, cultivating and, you know, people ending up moving to the UK for Ninja Theory or the US for a long list of other.
Yeah. So COVID sort of smashed that out of the water.
Awesome.
So, you know, I used to work at Weta FX, for example, in New Zealand, and, you know, they would never, you know, hire people remotely. And as did a lot of companies, COVID just threw that theory out the window. They all got set up. They realized that they could actually, you know, hire amazing talent from all parts of the world. You didn't need to be into the office and the whole, you know, work being exposed because you're working from home, was just a fallacy. So it didn't blow up like they expected it to. So it's opened the playing field, But if I was to come back to your original question about what that looks like in Australia, Australia's quite a unique, you know, in the last 3 or 4 years, we've had a lot of big name studios come to Australia, like there's D-Neg, Weta Effects are here now, all the top studios are kind of here, ILM are in Sydney, so there's lots of companies.
Yeah.
But again, to that point, they're still hiring remotely, so it's not necessarily sourcing all the local talent.
Yeah.
And from our perspective, the local talent isn't at the same level as what you find students or graduates from different parts of the world. And there's a number of reasons why that is happening, and I feel that because we are so remote from the rest of the world that we don't have the same level of competition.
Yeah. Okay.
So there's not that hunger, you know. Whenever I go to do school talks in France or in Europe, you've got several schools in different countries, in very close proximity. So they're a lot more. Their mentality for high level quality student projects is a lot higher than what it is here in Australia.
Mm.
There's also the education model is different. You know, when, you know, I talked about our global school rankings before, we're able to identify where those best schools from. And when you look at those, what those best schools are, they have really close industry ties. So they get a lot of mentors coming in, very close connections. They're up to date with the latest technology and techniques that they need to learn. Whereas here, we've got sort of quite an old-fashioned system with universities and the TAFE system that it's still not producing this type of students that are, you know, industry ready. So we're kind of a little bit left behind here. You know, we don't see any Australian schools really featured in our global school rankings, which is always interesting. Yeah. There is one.
Is that changing? Is the ranking, you kind of going to the education system and saying, hey, you guys are not on the scales here, like.
But it goes back to, like I mentioned before, you know, they're really slow in adapting. So that model needs to change. And for a lot of universities here, they don't have huge amounts of competition, right? So they don't feel like, you know, okay, we need to update our and the cycles to change curriculum are so long that I've seen universities miss complete cycles of software. And, you know, students are coming out and they've been taught one program and the industry's moved on and we're over here now.
Yeah.
So it's really, they're not some training facilities are just not as nimble. And that worries me. You know, when you think about generative AI and how fastly that's moving, it's moving at light speed in comparison to software releases, right, and sort of new software coming on the market. So how are education going to keep up with that?
Yeah, right. So, and there's some really interesting points you made there, and I'm very keen to kind of get there. But quickly back on the community piece. So we spoke a lot about the students, alumni, the judges. I mean, looking at your judging panels, very impressive. I mean, we've got literally Oscar winners in there. So again, in their kind of their history is incredibly amazing. How does that work? And also the partners. So Epic Games, you mentioned Animal Logic, Autodesk, etc. How does that work? And from a community perspective, but also then moving to my next question, the business model of the rookies. And again, only obviously what you can share, but there seems like there's multiple potential revenue streams which seem to be both beneficial to not just the rookies, but the ecosystem, the students, as you mentioned. So yeah, keen to get a view on, you know, how you build that that community from a judge's perspective, a partner's perspective, and what that means for the business ultimately.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny because the judging panel for the Rookie Awards, I think this year we've got close to 150 industry professionals that make up that judging panel, and it's actually seen as being quite prestigious to be invited onto the rookies judging panel now. And we get emails every week with people wanting to be part of the Rookie Awards judging panel.
It's credibility just being on the
credibility
panel,
right? Yeah, wow. The interesting thing with that as well is that, you know, there might be a senior level artist that, for example, I even just had this call yesterday, a senior artist that works at Riot Games, in LA that is part of our judging panel is going through, you know, wanting to get a 01 visa and work long time in the US. So being part of an international jury actually adds credibility to their visa application. So a lot of people will use it for that. So that's great because we don't pay any of these people to be part of the judging panel.
Again, it goes back to that love of the community and wanting to
exactly give back so and, yeah, they've been through it, they know where these young people are at. The other thing, I mean, we last year we had over 5,500 entries that were part of the Rookie Awards. Every single person that enters into the Rookie Awards gets a score or a judgment from our industry judging panel.
At so the it's end, not just like the top three.
It's not the top three.
So they still get
everybody gets something out of it. Just, they get a digital certificate saying, "Hey, industry, think you are A, B, or C," and they get a little bit of feedback. But for a lot of people, that's validation of all their hard work that they've been doing over the last couple of years, and just to get that can be a game changer for a lot of people.
Well, that's such a fascinating point because you know typically competitions like, did you win? No, I lost. It's a kind of binary.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, I got second or third. Oh, okay, there's something, but the rest just lose. But here, if I understand you correctly, like, oh, no, everyone gets a score. Everyone gets the valuable feedback from industry experts, let's say. So, yeah, that's amazing. So it's valuable for anyone and everyone who makes a submission.
Exactly. So that digital certificate, a lot of people will post on LinkedIn. As I mentioned before, everyone recognizes the Rookies brand. So somebody that may not have necessarily won may have got a really high ranking, and that can still open doors and opportunities for that person later on.
That's so cool.
So we invested in the tech and our platform a few years ago. So there's a full judging system that sits behind the Rookie Awards that makes it really streamlined for judges when they come on board to be able to judge, you know, lots of entries really, really quickly. They have a criteria that they have to go through, but it's super streamlined. We've had 14 years of judging the Rookie Awards, so we're able to handle 5,500 entries and make sure that everyone gets one. But with all that data, with every entry getting a score against it, that's what we use to then come up with our global school rankings because we have a really good snapshot of where the best students are coming out of in any particular year based off all that data that we collect. So 5,500 entries, we go, hey, you know what, look how many students from this school got into the draft or got into the finals or were overall winners. There's a whole algorithm that sits behind that to then go, cool, here's the top schools in the world for this particular category based off all the judgments and that.
Yeah, the insights must be amazing.
Oh, it's crazy. And schools can't pay to be part of our global school rankings. They will never be able to just pay to be on it. They have to essentially encourage their students to enter into the Rookie Awards for us to then, or industry professionals to evaluate the students' work to go, we think these students are industry ready.
Will they pay for the insights? I mean, I'm sure there's a lot of insights on like, how are we doing well? How are we not doing well? Like, can you give us insights to improve our university course?
Yeah.
Our short course,
so this is a good segue into the business model, right?
Yeah, okay,
so schools can pay to have a microsite on our website. Mm-hmm. So like I said earlier, we want to reward schools that are doing amazing jobs, that are featuring in the rankings, that are proud of the courses that they're teaching and the output of the students that are coming out. So as part of that, they can have a microsite and students' portfolios will link into that microsite. They can put information about the school. They can show a showreel, graduate showreel, or whatever it may be. So there's just a bit of information there so that when somebody that is our debut that has no idea where to go comes onto the Rookies platform, they go, okay, I want to get into game design and development. What are the top-ranked schools around the world? They can then see a clear picture of what the top schools are and the quality of the students' work by looking at portfolios, by checking out courses, all that sort of stuff. And then once they're interested, then they can go to the school site and find out more information about that.
Yeah, and just thinking of the school conversion funnel, let's say, as they're trying to attract students, I wouldn't even say that's, you know, the top of the funnel because the student of interest coming through this channel, let's say, is already down the funnel to some point.
Exactly.
They've gone through the program, they've got some skills there, you know, so it's not like, oh, I've just clicked on a on a search ad, you know, while I've been browsing, it's actually, oh wait, this might be halfway or very close to the conversion. So the value of that student to the school seems to be a lot higher than a random, you know, search ad as an example.
Exactly. It's I mean, you said it before, it's pure. It's, yeah. You know, there is, and you know, we don't do a lot of paid advertising. It's all organic. When you look at the rookies, we don't, because it's like people have discovered us, industry has, you know, talked about us. So organically, you know, we're known because of our connection with industry. And yeah, I think it's a really interesting model. So we have judges that come on giving feedback that, you know, that is then rewarding those entrants and people that come on the platform. We have our microsite, which is a revenue stream that comes in there. We have our partner, our studios and hardware, software partners that pay for advertising packages that are part of the Rookie Award. So that's another revenue stream there. And then also the, you know, rookies learning, which I talked about earlier on, which is, you know, again, getting schools involved in it. So there's a business model even inside of that.
Wow, multiple revenue streams. That's fascinating. Yeah. Yeah. And with that, I think my next question is, how do you manage that volume of projects? Like you mentioned, some of the technology has helped speed that up. But I mean, you also have a day job. So you're head of education partnerships, 3D and immersive at Adobe. You're in town right now. That I'm very glad we get to speak face to face because you're in town for the Adobe Make It event. So a lot of excitement around that. How do you handle the time there?
Yeah, I mean, there's a great team on the Rookies. Andrew McDonald, the other co-founder of the Rookies, is, you know, he's more tech savvy than what I am. So he is extremely smart at optimizing, automating, and just making sure that things are running. You know, when you think about 5,500 entries, having to go through all that data and be able to judge all that stuff, it can be very complex. So yeah, I think we're always reviewing systems and how we can optimize and use automation to be able to help us with that. I spend, you know, I'm full time with Adobe, so like I said earlier, I'm really fortunate that we get to view new industries that are embracing 3D. So I do a lot of school talks talking about opportunities for students. And, you know, we haven't talked about just even the current state of visual effects and games at the moment, you know, and technology in general. We're on a bit of a downward spiral just with the layoffs that are happening. But, you know, everything happens in cycles and we will come out of this. But right now, students that are studying these types of careers are kind of looking at, like, where am I going to get a job from, right? So I always say, hey, take a step back, look outside of just the games and visual effects world, because your skills can move into these other industries that are highly sought after. You can go, you know, you can move into these new companies and actually be at the forefront of digital change that they're looking for, and really elevate and you know, be at the start of all that. So there's a lot of amazing opportunities out there, and there's, you know, one thing that I've learned in my life, Ian, is that there is opportunity everywhere. Sometimes you just need to take a step back, take the blinkers off, and just, you know, and don't be scared to take those opportunities. You know, it might be a sideways opportunity that will then, propel you forward later. Yeah. You know, from the chefing world to where I am, you know, from actually country New Zealand where I grew up, where there was very limited opportunity to where I sit today. I always say that to my son. I said, don't freak out about education, mate, because the job that you're going to be going for is not even around right now. So, you know, I read that thing the other day about, I think it was one of the big leaders from the tech companies saying that, you know, forget about teaching our kids how to code now because of ChatGPT and all the rest of it.
NVIDIA.
NVIDIA, right? Yeah, yeah, it was old Jensen.
Such a good point, though.
It was, right? But, you know, go back like a year ago and we're all like, we've got to teach our kids coding, right? That's the way forward. And so that's how quickly things change. And I think that's why I just tell my son, just relax, dude. Just enjoy yourself. It'll all come.
But it's, yeah, so, I mean, this is a great point to kind of put a technical lens on the conversation, let's say. And with the evolution of the tools, the rate of innovation, as you mentioned, and the exponential adoption of things like generative AI, what's your take Yeah. Like, do you see it as a threat or an opportunity?
Everything's an opportunity. I'm an optimistic, so everything is an opportunity in my eyes. I think it's evaluating what these tools are. You know, I think it's going to cause a lot of disruption, particularly in games and visual effects, and a lot of other industries, actually, even the conversations I've been having. But it's looking at that disruption and going, where is the opportunity in that? And how do I position myself now, or pivoting, or think about pivoting to be able to put myself in the best spot for that? And I think when I look at this, particularly when it's the creative industries, you know, if you've got good fundamental skills in the artistic, then that's still going to help propel you a long way, even with all the generative AI stuff. You know, the things that are happening now are still going to need humans behind them to drive them. Mm-hmm. So good fundamental understandings of 2D, 3D, all these, you know, these skills, I think, are still, you know, still really, really important. But it's just, you know, like, even with the tech now in the hardware, or if it's software, it's been here around for a long time, but it's come to the fore now. And, you know, it's something that we should embrace. Like, I embrace it with my, you know, my kids. I'm like, you know, again, education is probably lagging behind. They're trying to deal. And if you wait for them, you're going to miss out. So yeah, it's kind of like, you know, I'm all for it. But yeah, just look for the opportunities and what that means for you as a student that's currently coming through, or even a professional right now. You know, there's going to be a lot of disruption.
Yeah. And that kind of, one of my favorite recent quotes is, AI won't take your job, but someone using it will. And
yeah.
I think, you know, what you mentioned there is exactly that. So people lean into new tools, how they can use them, the benefits and the drawbacks of them, and getting in early. Through experience, totally holds true. So question on that, like, how do you keep your community, the creatives, open-minded in this sense and up to speed with the ever-expanding tool set?
Yeah, so we embrace it, you know. So we, you know, we're as a portfolio website, people that are creating digital art, we're like, hey, if you want to use certain tools out there to create your artwork, then as long as you disclose it and you're transparent about it. And I think that's where Adobe do a great job with, you know, their transparency, where they're actually, you know, getting their learning models from and being ethically correct with the way that they're obtaining that data, I think is so just educating yourself on that. I think, with our platform, you know, we ask people to tag. We've got bits of software that are in there, or the, you know, code in there that will recognize bits and things. And I think there's this new technology coming out that I know from within Adobe.
Content Authenticity Initiative.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, yeah. So, if I understand you correctly, leaning into, encouraging the community to lean into the capabilities, the tools, leveraging them, but being transparent. And again, using things like the Adobe initiative of content authenticity and adding credentials to those. And just on point, and for those listeners who are not familiar with that, the content authenticity initiative is really, well, it's underpinned by a new an emerging technical spec called the C2PA, which really allows creators, content owners, to add provenance and transparency around their content to give it, you know, the whole intent is to build more trust around what we see, especially with the emergence of generative AI, et cetera. And again, not that generative AI produced assets are bad. It just gives them transparency around, this was either originated from a Gen AI model or originated from an actual physical camera, but then was edited throughout its history. So yeah, it's great to hear you and the community kind of leaning into that as well, and not shutting down what could potentially be an opportunity for students in future.
Yeah, I think we, from a technical perspective, we're always looking at how we can enhance the portfolio to make sure that we're up to speed with that. We've seen some websites that, you know, where the community have completely boycotted them because they didn't do or react as the community would have liked. We don't commercialize students' work at all. So we're all about the journey and how they get to that final portfolio of work. Yeah. So however you get there, as long as you're transparent about it. And to be honest, if I'm working in the industry and somebody submits a portfolio to me and I've got no idea how they got to that final image or video or whatever it is, then, you know, there's 100 other people that are going to disclose that I'm more interested in. So you have to be transparent with the journey and show those key milestones anyway. Mm-hmm. So you just have to get used to doing that, and that's going to be the way going forward.
Yeah, and I think over time we've found that, you know, disclosing the tool or the process actually shows some of the skill. Like, I don't know why, but what comes to head is, I've gone blank. What are those two magicians?
I know who you're talking about.
Penn and Teller.
Yeah, Penn and Teller, that's it.
Awesome. You watch them perform this magic trick and you're like, oh, that was pretty cool. And then they expose the magic trick and it's even more amazing.
Yes.
Because you're like, the skill involved to deliver that, oh my God. So again, that, you know, that just as an example, but in the creative space, you know, again, oh wow, you used a tool that I already know and I can use, but I've never seen it done in that way, or I've never seen it produce this. So, you know, the next level of prompting, or, you know, prompt engineering, as it were. So yeah, no, fascinating.
Yeah, and that's the way, you know, when if you're thinking about entering into the Rookie Awards, we get you to actually, it's not a work in progress, but it's to show key milestones along the way of how you got that final render. Yeah. So that our judges, our industry professionals, can go, oh wow, to your point, that's how they work that out. You can see the problem solving going on. You can see how they've been able to adapt or make change on their journey that may not necessarily have been completely obvious if you just posted that final image, right?
Yeah,
and so you get rewarded on that. So it's actually, it's, yeah.
Show you working.
Yeah, exactly. Show the inner workings.
I studied physics at university, and it was like, show you working, because even if the answer's wrong, if they understand your working method, they go, no, you still get a bunch of marks.
Yeah, that's cool. Yeah, show your workings.
Show your workings, yeah. But no, that's great. And as you said, like, they come across this problem in the process, they solved it in this way, even if the end result is not, you know, 10 out of 10 in terms of what they wanted, this person could be really,
exactly,
really great asset to solve these sorts of problems. Yeah, wow, okay.
Lots of insights.
Okay. Last question. What does the future hold and what are you most excited about?
Oh, I'm excited for students coming into these creative industries because we are going through a radical change and it's going to produce radical visuals and video content that we've never seen before. Storytelling, I think, is going to be, you know, everything is going through change. So opportunity, I always go back to opportunity. Don't be scared of it, embrace it, and just, you know, position yourself to be ready for that opportunity. Think, yeah, it's like, and like I said before, don't be disheartened. Everything goes in cycles, and there's always goods and bads and everything. Everything is about timing. You might have the best portfolio in the world right now, but companies aren't hiring. So just keep working on your craft while while you've got downtime, and get ready to strike when the cycle turns again. I think there's fantastic, you know, I'm excited, you know, the Adobe world, because we get to see all this amazing
cross-industry
team, you know, these teams developing new tech and stuff. So I'm just fortunate that I can communicate that to students. I love the Rookies community. I have, you know, like, it's growing, and I feel like we're only scratching the surface after 14 years of it. So, I'm always open to talk to people.
I just, so for those listening, I just see the excitement in your face.
I'm doing cartwheels.
Yeah. You can't see him, but he's doing flips in the studio. But no, it's great to hear, and fantastic advice. So I think, you know, if I need to summarize, I mean, there's so much really interesting thing we just spoke to, but if I was to summarize some of the, I think, learnings, I suppose, one, with the continued disruptions in both the industry and the technology, as you suggested, it seems that students and even, like, you know, the parents, because I know that's a big part of students' process, you know, getting the support from the parents, that they can be reassured that, you know, there's opportunity, that there's a platform like the Rookies out there with a proven track record and a claim to, you know, be able to kickstart and evolve your career across industries, so movies, AAA games, design, etc. I think the second one, community, it really struck me how outside of just the skill set and accreditation, how much the community plays, the role it plays, not just as a student, but, you know, as you become an expert, a pro, a judge, even. And I think last, what was really interesting, the business model, again, multidimensional and again, mutually beneficial, delivering, you know, value to the students, creators, industry, and the experts as well. So, you know, just the fascinating, just everyone wins from this, which is fantastic. But yeah, with that, thank you.
No, thank you for inviting us on. It's been a real pleasure. And great questions. It really helped me discover a lot, even what, you know, the Rookies platform is about. But I think it always comes back to that core and the heart and soul of the community. Without the community, we would be nothing. So, I thank everyone that's part of it.
Awesome. Thank you so much. And for those listening, therookies.co. Check it out.